you are very welcome to another episode of the Sideshow Garden Podcast. You might remember, not last week, but the week before, I had a gentleman by the name of Neil Grant on the show. He is the MD of Ferndale Garden Centre based in Sheffield, and he is also the voice of BBC Radio Sheffield Phone In on a Sunday morning, which I highly recommend you do go and take a listen to. If you haven't heard part one, put this one on pause, go back not last week but the week before, and then come back here and this one will continue playing for you. It should do anyway. You're back. That's fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, Neil Grant.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
I want to bring you just a little bit sideways, Neil, if I can. It's not a bear bug. Is that a right terminology? But a gripe. Not a gripe. I don't get irate. I tend not to get upset. I have four sisters and three brothers. I'm the lower of the middle child. I'm the quietest man. Eternally happy is how I would note it on my Twitter bio. At the same token, unless you rob my falafel, which is made of Cornettos and cornflakes, you're pretty much safe in my department. And don't touch my pint of Guinness while you're at it. There is and has been a lot of reporting, but from the Monty Dons and the Alan Titchmarshes of this world, who tend to come out and say, well, children should garden more. I would see that on two levels, which is, number one, my daughter nor your daughter is reading the Daily Telegraph nor the Guardian. So you can say all you want, but those headlines seem to be directed to the mom and the dad rather than to the daughter or the person under 20 years of age. So it doesn't really make a difference, but congratulations, you've just got an entire page to yourself with a lovely photograph of you at the top of it, as yeah, far as I'm concerned. You, on the other hand, set up the National Children's Gardening Week, which says, as far as I'm concerned, pretty much the same thing, except for Neil Grant tends not to grab the headlines as much. Have I appraised that relatively sanely?
Yeah, I think you have. I think we need the Monty Dons and the Alan Titchmarshes, because they'll get heard potentially at government level and certainly at media level. So their message is valid. I mean, the reason I came up with the idea was because I'd watched our kids grow up, and they're just now getting into gardening as adults, and suddenly discovering, even in our environment, they pretty much haven't got a clue. And I was thinking, you know, if you were going to impact kids with gardening, when could you do something nationally and at what time of year? And I came up with the half term in the summer term in the UK. You could pretty much give any child in the UK a tomato plant, and they could grow it in a pot somewhere in the UK fairly successfully without a lot of equipment. And it made me think, well, garden centres are in the perfect position to help families do that, because the kids don't come in saying, Mum, I want a garden. It comes in as grandparents and mums come in and saying, oh, that looks like a bit of fun. We did a bit of that, but it never worked. But it could do. Let's see what we can do. And I think it started out, got about 50 garden centres in the first year to get involved, put on activities. Some of it's just simple, like colouring in pictures of flowers. Some of it's sowing seeds. Some of it's planting up containers and so on, painting bird boxes and all those sort of garden type related things. What's now happened is, after 5 years, because I went in with the HTA, the Horticultural Trades Association, and they put all their office muscle behind it and done an amazing job. And this year, our claim to fame is that Prue Leaf was gardening with her grandchildren during National Children's Gardening Week, tweeted about it, and put the hashtag in there as well. So, you know, from nothing 5 years ago, we've got people starting to do things. And nurseries, I just watched the social media during that week, particularly, from big business, supermarkets, your local children's nursery, schools. It's just gripped people. I think they just see it as something different, something that kids can get involved in. There's people out there to help. There's lots of activities to do. It's the most exciting time, really, for gardening in this country. And a lot of it to do with getting kids involved, because it drags the parents in. Obviously, the cynical part would say, well, that's great, because you just want parents and grandparents to spend money at garden centres. Well, great, that's brilliant. But if we could get kids understanding plants and having fun, without being too grandiose, we could change their lives forever, because if they start eating vegetables and growing things, it's part of, they've got a real understanding, children now, because of the curriculum about the environment, and gardening is part of the environment.
When I grew up, God, I sound old now, but when I grew up...
Not as old as me.
I'm not even getting into this one. We're halfway to an oil of Ule. No, it's oil of Ole now, I'm told.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
Even that's changed. But it didn't exist,
no.
Neil. It was something that, I say, old people did. And those old people when I was six, I'm sure were my age now, but they always appeared, or at least they looked older. Maybe the picture in my head stems back to what was on television at that time, which was a man in a potting shed, invariably with a beard and an old woolly jumper.
Yeah.
And it felt like a Harry Enfield sketch, to be quite fair about it, at least in my head.
Yeah.
But it certainly was not what it is now. It just didn't exist at all. And now we seem to have this thing where it is part of the school's curriculum. We have stars, I should say, like Greenfinger George, an RHS ambassador, now just celebrated his 14th birthday a couple of weeks ago. Congratulations, George. But I had never, ever seen anything like that before. The RHS was a mammoth of an organisation, which was, you might say, untouchable 30, 40 years ago. And now it seems to all have changed. Am I far off the mark on that?
No, I think you're right. I think all organisations are having to change because people's lifestyles have changed. And, you know, if the RHS had carried on as they were 40 years ago, they would have no members today, or just a few older retiring members. So we've all, and even as a business, we've got to keep changing to attract new customers, to keep them interested. We all get so bored so quickly nowadays because there's so many things to do. I mean, our main competition is the garden centre. For people spending with us is not other garden centres, it's anything else that draws them away from us. You know, so it could be holidays, it could be a day out at Chatsworth around here, it could be going to the local pub that's got a children's play area, it could be going to the cinema. You know, we've all got to be grabbing a bit of that leisure pound or leisure euro in Ireland. We have to change, and I think part of the change is actually people are sort of cocooning in the sense of protecting their kids and their families, and they want stuff for themselves. We've all got very selfish, but at the same time, we as gardeners, as business people, we can sort of recognize that and just say, well, we can help you out there. And I think that's where the fun is, really. And if every day has not got some fun in it, it's a long life, isn't it?
How do you do the gardening bit with kids in your own garden centre, Neil? Obviously, they have to be, I would gather, driven there, or the parents have to cycle to you or walk to you, one or the other. But in the courses, gardening classes, maybe, that would involve children, how does that bit work? Is it as simple as you have rightly put it, that we, on Saturday morning, it's going to be painting bird boxes, or has even that changed? Because when I look at my daughter now, she may not watch gardening on, let's say, YouTube, for example. She certainly isn't watching the television, I can tell you that for free, because ours is disconnected invariably anyway. But the knowledge that she would come back with from school of not being afraid of a bee that might sting her, of knowing that that's at least at a minimum a pretty flower, of rolling around in the grass, of knowing how to pick a gooseberry without getting pricked on the finger, the very, very simple things maybe that she sees her dad doing. Are you finding maybe that children are, I say children, I don't mean that disrespectfully, I was never called a child as a young person, I was always called a young man, I should add, but are you finding that even those classes and courses are changing?
Not at the moment. I think the stuff that enthralls them is getting their hands in soil and compost, putting seeds in. It's got to be stuff that grows quickly. You know, the painting of the pot beforehand is just a bit of fun to go with it. So, but it also helps break the thing that the pot has to stay the same as when you bought it. You know, it's a bit of art in the garden as well. So at the moment, we're finding simple activities. I mean, these next few weeks or through the summer holidays, we've got plant a herb pot, plant an indoor garden. I think we've got a bird box painting event and another one. And we do it by ticket now, because we can't cope with just having people turning up. So they book online, and then we just keep repeating them then as people find them good. It's not a problem getting people in. We've got lots of, well, what do you do with your kids in the summer holidays? That's the big problem for most parents, isn't it?
Well, I suppose it is. Well, I have to admit, hand on heart, I am away. I'm told I have a postal address on the small island. That's what I'm told. And I am, I can hand on heart say I am never there. People expect that I am always in Dublin when in fact I am. No, I'm usually on your island, in fairness.
Yes, you are.
Neil, take me back to the plant side of it. As a... What was the last plant? I think I bought myself a magnolia tree. I'll get to the variety of that on another chapter. But it was a conversation that came up probably about a week or two ago when I was speaking at Rusborough House. And the point I'd made there was that if I take the trends of plants, at least that I have been a part of, one, headers and conifers were something that I haven't planted since my first year in college when I was 17 years of age. I'm now 43, so you can do the maths on that yourself at home. If I take it to the height of, let's say, 2006, 2007, everything was zero maintenance, virtually, is what was the request at least. And to now, we certainly seem to have moved to a... the last garden I did was the first one in quite a long time that the immediate request was he wanted about 10 trees in the garden before Brilliant. Anything else was done. A slight bit unusual, bearing in mind this was a small, I say small domestic back garden, but it wasn't an acre or what you would see on Monty Don's television programme.
Yeah. I think people don't want to spend a lot of time on the gardens. I think they do still want them to look amazing. So we are seeing designers come up with ideas that are colourful, fairly easy to maintain. You still don't have to do a lot. I mean, there's nothing like, is there for most people, on a lovely summer's day, inviting your friends around, and sticking a drink in front of them and then going, oh, your garden looks amazing. And if you've managed to do that without doing any real work on it as well, it's even better. So... But it's interesting that around here, the local authorities, because of cuts, are not cutting the grass as much on the verges. So they're using a lot of so-called wildflower mixes. And the cities around here are starting to look amazing. So it's starting to give people an idea. And of course, that's low maintenance. So that should transfer into people's gardens gradually. So I think we're all getting a bit better at saying, well, actually, here's some good plants you don't have to do a lot with. You've covered Pete Oldove's film, and I've seen it since you talked about it a few months ago. And I think people like him are starting to have an impact on people are saying, can I have a garden that looks a bit like that? And I know that he did all the research on plants that didn't need any staking, the slugs didn't seem to bother them and so on. The nursery side's got to catch up a bit with that. But now, if you want to get me going on the nursery industry... my big fear is that they've been so desperate to stay in business the last few years because it's been really tough. They've forgotten who's planting the plants. So we get new introductions, but actually what we're going to do with them, where do they grow, how are we going to put them together? And I think as the nursery production industry really should be talking to garden designers and saying, this is our range. What could our end users do with them? Forget what the garden centers are going to do with them. What could our end users do with them? How are we going to put those three plants together? How could we put those seven plants together? And that's the big exciting part for the future for me, is if the whole industry, particularly the growing side, can start saying, we've got all these amazing plants, but all we do is produce them. We don't think about what they're going to do. Now, that would be just my dream before I pack up if that was happening.
Okay, two things now have popped into my head.
Yeah.
One... is the influence from shows. You would be at most of the shows that I would be at reporting for BBC Sheffield. Two, is there an influence from what you see in those shows into what happens at a nursery garden centre level? Pause that to one side. And number two, on the nursery production level, there was one of the gardens that I was working on at Hampton Court Palace Flower Show 2019. And in that, some of the pots were a company that I know well, Haxnix, and they do pots that are made from recycled bamboo products. However, their pots are a sort of a beige golden brown. And beige golden brown pots cannot be used in show gardening because... you plant that plant into the compost, but you don't take it out of the pot, and the rim of the gold beige brown is visible through the black soil, where in a black plastic pot it would not be. And I can see designers turning around saying, no, I don't want them in that. I'll bite the nurseries are saying they have to come in X. Now, maybe Hacksnix will turn around, for example, and say, well, okay, we've taken in feedback, we need to produce a black one. But either or, there is a point at which the designer is now speaking to the nurseries, whether you like it or not. And number two, I guess there's the reverse, which is the nursery speaking to the designer?
Well, I would guess that most of the nursery, depends on the nursery supplier, because if it's a nursery that specializes in the garden center industry, they got to move to a recyclable pot. And eventually, I think we'll move to pots that can be fully composted. That's going to take some time, but in the meantime, but if they're producing for shows, which I know there are quite a few specialists out there, then they could reuse their pots, couldn't they? It's back to the conversation we had before about cleaning pots. Now, if they're happy to take the pots back and reuse them the next time, then they could use pots for years and black pots for years and years and years and years. So, yeah, I mean, the environmental side is going to affect us all more and more. Pushed, dragged, screaming, whatever.
How is that affecting you at this moment in time, Neil? And again, I'll go back and say it, 20, maybe not 20 years ago, but 30 years ago, it certainly wouldn't have been anything new for me to walk into any garden centre in any country and there was a bit of a fire out the back garden where they were burning they had left over. Those days are now gone, I'm glad to say. However, if we take it to a more serious matter, there is a point where if you have a black plastic pot, if it's a state body, if it's a local council that are using plastic pots, invariably Jimmy or Mary walking by with their iPhone is going to stick it out on Twitter and say, Sheffield Council, you should be ashamed of yourself, blah, 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 etc., etc. And the storm rage sort of kicks off, which I'm not saying that's wrong, but I'm aware of, logically, of what the knock-on effect is. Have you been influenced by that? Do you have to be overly PC in how you do things? And what is, I guess, in a nutshell, Neil, is customer not controlling, but is customer influencing how you do things?
It is, definitely. I mean, I think I've been concerned for some years before the pot recycling issue popped its head up recently about we're an industry that says we green the nation, but actually what's our carbon footprint like? What's our plant miles and our plastics side. Now, the HPA have set up a national scheme for the first time in the last 12 months where garden centres can collect customers' black pots back and they then go to a recycling plant. And of course, what a lot of people don't realise is that all black garden centre pots are already recycled plastic already. It's not brand new plastic, so we fail to get that message across. But black plastic can't go into your local council collections because a lot of it's done by infrared now, which is why the pot colours changed. So the machines can pick out the beige coloured pots and the grey coloured pots, but they can't pick out the black ones. Gradually there'll be less of those, but the industry is also working together to get the stuff recycled and brought back. Each garden centre has to sign up and it takes time, and collecting the things it's another add-on cost. Collecting the pots, stacking them, stopping them blowing around and so on is a bit of an issue. But gradually that will appear across the nation.
When I was at Hampton, Neil, myself and Phil Tremaine, who is the...
Oh, no, Phil.
Yeah, lovely guy, Phil. The face of the APL, I think I jested that there are 2,110 Phil Tremaines in total because he is absolutely everywhere. I've never not been to a gig and not bumped into Phil, and he, the patience of a saint and always makes me smile.
Yeah.
But myself and Phil were talking about, in a nutshell, the promotion of horticulture. And maybe we're back to the person who may be on the television ending up with a full page saying children should garden more. But there is also a point where I'm reminded of an article that Robbie Blackhall Miles wrote some years ago about the death of the Iris Association in the United States. And maybe that ties in with what we were also saying about the RHS, and if they hadn't adapted to change, then per your words, they wouldn't have the members that they have today.
No.
There is still a perception, Neil, that gardening is for, inverted commas, old people, number one. But on the other hand of it, I will say there are an inordinate amount of people who will not promote the thing that they do and then maybe become the angry man from The Simpsons who shakes his fist at the thing over there and says, well, somebody should do something. There's a part of my head, I guess, which if I even take why and how the sideshow all started, it was because at the time there was only Gardner's Question Time. The Guardian podcast, or the then Guardian podcast with Jane Perrone, not exist. And outside of that, the RHS didn't even have a podcast. There was nothing else available at the time. Now, I know podcasting, it is the new craze. Everybody has a bloody podcast, you say, these days. And congratulations, and I hope it all goes well. But if I go back to when I started this thing that I do instead of playing golf, there was nowhere for somebody, I say, like you to come on and speak to me for a half an hour, or for me to line a cargo net with Kate Gold upside down and talk about why she built that show garden and get a look inside her head. Are we just terrible at doing the promo thing, Neil? What do we as an industry maybe need to do different?
Well, I think you're doing the right thing, because I think the advantage of today is against 30 years ago is that we've got the technology for anybody to do it. We've talked about the credibility of some people out there in the social media side who don't know what they're talking about, which is really concerning. I am a council member for the Horticultural Trade Association, so I represent the northeast of England, and that is giving us a voice into much bigger things. And what most people don't realise is the RHS and the HTA and the NFU, to a degree, have got the ear of government. And one of the side blessings, or not, whichever way you look at it, of Brexit is that government's having to talk to industries all over the country. So for the first time in my memory, government's come to our industry and said, if we leave Europe, or when we leave Europe, what do you need from us? And they're having to sit up and listen, and they're listening to stuff they've never heard before. So getting behind trade associations is fantastic, because most people don't realize the RHF isn't just for the members. They're doing a massive amount of work at government level, because they've got good links, they're down in the right area and so on. So the HTA is the same. And the more we can encourage our trade associations to talk at government level, then they can start to change things. The government have just signed a 25-year in the UK environmental green agreement, and it includes massive planting of plants. Now, there's so many opportunities like that, and it's a law, they've got to stick to it, they've got to fulfill the commitments they've made and agreed with the industry. A lot of the change has to come at government level. I mean, when you start to get the NHS over here recognizing that actually gardening and being outside is good for people with depression, and they're starting to follow a thing in Sweden where Swedish doctors could actually prescribe gardening as a help towards people with depression, you then start to realize that something fundamentally is changing high up. And as those changes come through, we've all got to get behind initiatives of our own and just keep the thing going. So it's down to us all, but it's also down to working together with the bigger bodies.
Do we need, Neil, as I say, and again, let's put an invisible line in the sand here, where you have people who shall I term them influencers of horticulture or influencers of the internet, to differentiate that again. And then there are the likes of, let's say, yourself and myself, and I don't know, the Andrew Fisher Tomlins of this world, or the Mark Gregory's of this world, or the Kate Goles, or whatever name you want to pick that is a voice that I would respect, a trusted voice, to borrow one of your words. If I'm to take it on that level, excluding the Montes and the Titchmarshes of this world, do we need to do more as an industry to promote ourselves?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think we have been promoting ourselves. I mean, the nursery growers particularly do not have marketing departments. They don't think marketing. I think in the UK, there's something like 580,000 people employed in ornamental horticulture. That's massive. But we're all small individual businesses. So if we don't link together with our trade associations, there's no general voice. But we've all got a place. I mean, I've got a friend who accidentally, and it's another story, became a local councillor, and we bump into each other again. And I can put our view across to him so he can talk about it and have some facts at council level here. And some of us know MPs, and I know they're a little bit busy over here at the moment. But, you know, they still we've got have place of influence. We probably just don't think we've got that influence as individuals sometimes, and we definitely have. So, I mean, I want to get National Children's Gardening Week onto the One Show next year. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I want to get it on there, because getting it on, say, to Gardeners World on a Friday night is not going to have the same impact as talking about it on a tea time, prime time program with young, trendy presenters and lots of interesting guests. So, you know, we have to be more active and more ambitious and think, well, actually, the media is desperate for stories, and we've got amazing stories to tell.
I've got a ton of amazing stories to tell, Neil, but I'm not too sure any of them are suitable for repeat on the Sod Show.
Tell me that over a Guinness one day.
I'll take great pleasure in that, Neil. if I take even the support of the Sod Show, just as an example for you listening at home, if I take what CED Natural Stone have done in basically picking up the phone and saying, Peter, we like the cut of your jib. We like how you do things. We like the fact that you report for no greater gain, for no money at all, traveling to this show or that show or whatever the case might be, in your own spare time, at your own cost. We want to make that a little bit easier for you. Here's a small bag of cash to cover the cost of the hotels and the flights, etc., etc. If I take London College of Garden Design, again, the aforementioned Andrew Fisher-Tomlin, who did, you know, huge applause to them, something similar. I'm not great at asking for things. I know this. There is no Patreon account. I won't take money from listeners for their Sod Show, and people are suggesting again maybe I should, but I don't want to do that. But I get a warm feeling in my heart. It makes me feel that I'm doing something right when the industry or people from the industry turn around and say, Peter, how you doing? We want to hold your hand. Let's go for a walk together. You record your thing, and then we will sleep better knowing that we've got another 10 or 20 episodes of The Sod Show because we helped you make that happen. We don't want a radio jingle. We don't want a t-shirt. We don't even want a free mug. Just go and do that. Is a better maybe collaboration required? Because let's be honest about it, we can't all make our stories happen on BBC, that won't show our BBC
no.
at all.
No, I think there's so many opportunities. I think once some of our suppliers over the years have got carried away with the way they spend the marketing budgets, and I think they're just terrified now of sponsoring anything. But it's about getting a friendly ear. You're known in your part of the industry, I'm known in mine, and you know, if we feel passionate about something, we need to push some of our suppliers sometimes to be able to say, you want to get on board with this? You know, we're not aiming to make money out of it. But yeah, it's a big job. It would be great to have some famous people pick it up and run with it. Interesting enough, I picked up just recently following Xylella, you know, this bacterial disease that's affecting Italy and olive trees, that Helen Mirren's got involved with it as a supporter of the olive industry in Italy. You know, I just said to the HDA, we've got to get Helen Mirren involved in this story in the UK. So if we can find some of these other people who've already got the ear of the media, sometimes I think that helps, but we just have to keep doing our bit, don't we? I'll do my bit on a Sunday morning and you carry on with the podcast, and I want to play around with video stuff, and we'll just have to see who we can drag in. It's quite actually, when we do the workshops, our suppliers will happily sponsor them with compost and bits and bobs so we can make it easier and cheaper for the kids and stuff. So it's out there. Perhaps we don't ask enough.
Well, for those of you listening at home, or for those of you listening in the industry, don't be afraid to ask.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you do want to get in touch and there's anything Neil has said in the last episode or two, just drop me a line at Sod Show on Twitter, facebook.com/thesodshow.com. I think it's in all good podcast stores, etc., etc. Neil Grant is the MD of Ferndale Garden Centre based in Sheffield, and you can tune in and hear him every Sunday on BBC Sheffield phone-in. You can catch it on TuneIn if you're listening in the US of A in Salt Lake City. Hello to everyone out there. That is where we are going to leave this double episode just for now. I promise you I'll have Neil back on. We've got an elongated list of things that we want to discuss, and no better voice to have on to chat that with. An absolute pleasure. Neil Grant, thank you so much for your time. It's been a real pleasure, my good man.
Thank you. Keep going. It's good stuff.
Excellent, I will do. Bear with me. Neil, we're good. I have it all.
I'm excellent.
Yeah, yeah.